Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett, and with me are certified financial planners Tyler Cook and Tony Payne. And we're going to be talking a lot about boomer futures. This is something when I was researching this topic, I think will hit everybody. We always think that we're going to be working forever, and kind of life hits you with a softball and that changes. But, you know, what about the planning to, you know, to live long? You live on your terms, have enough to, you know, set everything aside so that you can do that. I guess the question that I came up with, you know, what do you mean I might spend more years retired than I did working, right? That whole mindset that I might have to kick it out sooner, you know, and what if I'm bored by year 12?
What if? Yeah. I mean, again, this is back
that's
to the idea.
That's something we don't talk about a lot.
You know, live long and prosper almost. That's the goal. That's what we want to do. And the idea that we're living longer, all of us, and we're really seeing that with the boomers, first of all. I mean, again, since the Industrial Revolution, and then with modern medicine, the ability to mind your health better, people being more mindful of things, longevity just keeps going up. Mm-hmm. So the idea of a traditional retirement being 20, 30 years, I mean, that's exactly what you're saying. When you think about how long's my working career, you know, if it was 25 to 65, that might be 40 years. Mm-hmm. But if you live to 108, you're living longer than what your working career was. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea of, hey, my money has to last long enough for me to really be able to live long and prosper.
I think there's a lot of emphasis, too, on just getting to that retirement goal, whatever the date is.
No, you're obsessed at a certain point. I can attest to that. You sit and go, okay, I have X amount of years before I can stop doing this, which nothing personal.
I was like, wait a minute. Hold on. Not too soon. Okay.
No, not
right.
that. But
breaking
you,
news.
You do, when you, especially when you're spinning or you've got people spinning around you talking about it in your circle or even at work in my job, you do think about it. And I can remember having this conversation with my sister. She was about my age. And I told her, you might have 12 to 15 years of the potential to earn income. Now you got to figure out what you're going to do, you know. And it literally went from zero to 180 and was gone. That time was gone. And she did nothing about it. So I think about this a lot, especially given that conversation. I mean, people are living longer. So how long are people living? Let's just kind of go through that now. It used to be what?
Yeah, and our projections, based on somebody's starting point when they meet with us, age 90 to 92 is the average.
Oh, God help.
Now, as you get older, those odds increase, of course. But if you're looking at on average, I'd say it's about 90, 92 is the numbers we're using. Now, of course, if you look at life expectancy in the U.S., it's less than that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's based on family history. So there's a lot of variables that go into it. But I think, again, going back to the emphasis on getting to that retirement date, people neglect what are they actually going to do. And so the question we like to ask is, what are you going to do when every day is a Saturday? People will jump to, I'll play golf, or I'll do this, or I'll take care of the grandkids. Once you get a rhythm going, maybe a year or two in retirement, it's funny, we see people that they say they're busier in retirement than they were when they were working.
I can't fathom that.
Well, and it's weird, the concept
you
for
guys
us
talk
now,
a lot about working. Being more expensive sometimes to be retired. Because, and golf will take that as an example. It's an expensive hobby to have.
Well, and think about it, really. I mean, if you're working, there's 5 days a week spoken for that I can't do anything, really. Mm-hmm. And if I'm retired or I have a bunch of time, now I get all 7 days a week that I'm retired that I can enjoy. Every day's a weekend. Now I want to spend a little more. So if during my planning, maybe I cut myself a little short, I thought about, well, I'm spending this amount per year. Well, that's when you were doing nothing, when you were working, when you were just going from point A to point B. Now that you're retired, you want to do some more fun things. So sometimes planning ahead for that is really important.
Yeah. I think in general, the first 2 years, people spend a lot more than they think they're going to, for exactly what you just said. There's a lot of flexibility there. So planning ahead for that. And I think one of the biggest things you can do is the major purchases that you might need, like a new vehicle. Maybe if there's a move coming, do those before you actually retire. Get those big expenses out of the way first. Then you can kind of glide into the lifestyle aspect of what you're actually going to do.
Well, you hit a little bit on planning for multi-decade income streams. Let's tell people what that looks like. How hard is that to obtain? And at what age do you start?
Well, what age are you retiring? Because that's where it gets really tricky. If we're thinking about retiring in our 40s or 50s, we're really thinking about maybe 50, 60, maybe 70 years, depending upon how much longevity goes up, that's crazy. You might have to rely on your money or that stream. And if you're retiring that early, sometimes you may not even be able to tap into a 401k or IRAs. You might need after tax money, or basically money that is in a bank account or a brokerage account that you can access without having to pay any tax penalties, things like that. Mm-hmm. So when you're planning your saving strategy, that really is important to incorporate. Which buckets am I saving in? And that really ties into your goals too.
And then taxes as well.
That's a moving target. You know, that's one of those things that's constantly in flux, but you can have some parameters around what, you know, estimates as far as the actual costs are going to be. But to think you've saved $2 million in your 401k and it's what you got is $2 million, you better consider the tax implications of that mm-hmm. if it's all pre-tax money. So mm-hmm. Again, long-term strategies, planning for multiple decades as far as living expenses, you've got to do the work earlier in the plan to do that. If you try to catch up at age 70, probably not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Going through my notes here, model for a phase two retirement. So we're spending changes dramatically, housing, healthcare, and that kind of thing. I mean, we kind of addressed that a little bit, but should somebody have, you know, literally a bullet point list and a timeline put together for that?
If I'm thinking about it, there's really two phases, that first fun phase, and then maybe the second phase of slowing down and maybe family's more valuable. And well, it happens. We all have
it happen. I'm in my fun phase, Tony. This is as fun as it's going to get.
I mean our fun phase in retirement. That first phase in retirement. Oh, geez. I'm not going to correct that, Cole. Along the way, though, the idea of those first couple of years, like you said, Tyler, all those projects you put off around the house, all the things you wanted to do that you didn't have time to do because you were working, the trip you wanted to take you couldn't take, those are the things you do right away. And then after 10, 15 years in retirement, maybe your knees go, you're starting to slow down a little bit. Maybe there are other health issues that come up with you or your spouse, because sometimes it's not just you or your health. It might be your spouse's too that helps, not helps, but unfortunately may change the retirement.
Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing more of too is people retiring from their main, you know, 30-year career and doing the part-time thing. A lot of times that's just to get health insurance.
Yeah,
you see people working at Starbucks that are in their 60s. Right. They're probably there for those reasons. And that's a reality. And the cost of care continues to increase. And as you age, it's a natural part of the progression that healthcare expenses become a majority, or not a majority, but a larger portion of your living expenses than in your working years. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have some cash flow to help offset the multiple decades of expenses. And they might work until they're 70 doing something part-time. Hopefully that's something they find passion in. My father did that, had a great job doing that with just kind of had three part-time jobs after he retired, but he loved it. And he finally said, you know what, I'm done. So it was a glide path. It wasn't a cliff. It was a gradual kind of waterfall type reduction.
Great analogy.
Of income.
Yeah.
And that worked well.
So many of us I'm part of this generation, we're caught in the middle. You know, we talk about the sandwich generation. Mm-hmm. Some people don't know what that means. I myself had to take care of my father, and I had kids in the house. So finding that balance, and boy, do I wish I had known then what I know now. Unfortunately, started working for the firm after the fact, but there's a lot of layers to that lifestyle and a lot of emotional stress. And it can be really challenging, especially if you don't have the income to support, you know, the extra individual in your house. So let's talk about some financial planning focus for those people that are kind of on the horizon of you know, mom's kind of losing her memory here and there once in a while. And we might need to start thinking about, you know, bringing her into the house or having, you know, transitioning her, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. What you're describing is what we formally call dependent planning. And when people hear dependent planning, they often think college savings, worrying about the kids. Mm-hmm. But to your point about the sandwich generation, it's really the other end, talking about caregiving for your elderly parents. And that's not only is an emotional burden, but it can be a financial one as well if mm-hmm. the parents haven't done enough to put themselves in a financial independent stage. And so I think from balancing that, it's really taking a toll on a lot of generations. I watched my family go through it as well with aging parents. And then if you get cognitive issues that come in the way, dementia, Alzheimer's, those types of things, it just expounds the issue. So I think the strategy there would be to have those conversations early when things are good with your parents.
That's tough terrain.
It is tough. That's tough for different families. And I think the ones we've seen work the best are when there are those open conversations among the family. Certainly those who would have roles like a power of attorney, things like that. Just awareness is the first part of the conversation. And it can start with a simple question, you know, hey, mom and dad, do you have your estate planning documents in place? And that could lead to, well, what do you mean? I've got a will. No, I'm not talking about the will. I'm talking about why you're still here.
I'm going to interrupt you because this generation is we are so private about those things that those conversations are so taboo with many of us. How do you give somebody a tip to broach that?
I would challenge that maybe a little bit just in my experience seeing kind of both sides of that situation. Certainly there is that audience that is hesitant, and it's more the depression mm-hmm. era type, I would say, mm-hmm. to release that information amongst their adult children. But there's also a kind of a new wave of people who are maybe in their 70s or 80s now mm-hmm. that are comfortable talking about that.
True.
We've actually facilitated family meetings, and it's been some of the most rewarding things that we've done, mm-hmm. just providing clarity. And that's a huge step.
Yeah. Referee.
That's your job. Not referee.
Not blowing the whistle or anything like
no,
that.
No, more, well, more coordinator.
Or moderator.
Okay, moderator.
Marriage counselor, like we like to say. Right. In this case, right. it's more of you're more there to just observe and provide insight.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the CFP role. I just kind of juke a little bit off the conversation, but I certainly didn't. When I think of a financial advisor, I think of money. I think of a game of numbers.
Well,
and boy, it's way beyond that.
So to that point is the generalist. I mean, we think about an aging population, things like memory care, long-term care. You know, what do I do about mom? What do I do with the kids? I'm in the middle of saving for my retirement. It's not uncommon. I mean, we're all going through it in one phase or another, whether it's our retirement, taking care of others in one way or another. So the idea that it's such a big issue that out of all things for both parties to talk about, this is one of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different proposals, different ways to get there, but the idea of recognizing that people need to leave work to take care of mom or dad. People need to do these things that, you know what, there's just not enough caretakers, the care's so expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a shift in how things are handled. We don't know exactly what that looks like yet. So the best thing you can do to prepare for it is be ready in your retirement. Because like you were saying, Tyler, too, you don't have to worry about 90 if you didn't make it to 70. So plan ahead for the base retirement first before you start worrying about all the ifs and thens.
Mm-hmm. I'll be very candid. I had this conversation with my family probably a couple years ago now, but I was very straightforward in saying, mom and dad, I'm not coming to change your diapers. Like, that's not a thing. I'm not good at that. I'm not going to be the one that's going to be there to do that. So what's the strategy? What are we going to do to plan for that? And maybe it's long-term care insurance, maybe it's not, but there's other really cool planning techniques that you can implement while things are good to prepare for when they're, you know, they start to go south. And you just look at your family history as the starting point. What's been the trend? Have people been in long-term care facilities for 10 years or 2 years? You got to walk through those conversations, and the best thing you can do is just start talking now.
And do the research. What's the average adult community stay?
It's very high. Average is about age 80 and 3 years stay for nursing home. So they go in at age 80, about 3 years, actually a little less than that, but then until they pass.
That's higher than I thought it would be.
That's years or the age?
The age. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we seem to be living longer, a little healthier. I saw a study recently that said each decade that passes almost adds a decade to life expectancy for those under 60. So we're seeing it where it's starting to really...
Hold on, I'm visual. What does that mean? Tell me that again.
So if you're 50 and the life expectancy right now is 90, okay. which it isn't, but I'm using an example right. with a round number, then it would be 100 because the average life expectancy is going up by a decade. So if you're 40, well, then it would be 110. Mm-hmm. So again, that was a J.P. Morgan study, so we'll see how true that becomes. But the idea of, you know what, we're going to be living longer, the better medicine gets. And they talk about what AI can do with cancer treatment, stuff like that. I mean, we don't know what that might lead to. So the idea of, you know what, I'm done with this work. I'm going to retire at 50. You may want to hope you don't live 70 more years.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's crazy. AI is a whole other conversation. That's just amazing.
Another day.
When you get into the healthcare. You spoke about Medicare earlier, so I have a question for you about that. So healthcare and long-term care, growing price tag. We see it every day. I hear you guys talking about it. Medicare doesn't cover everything. And I've actually heard conversations in my circle before of a couple of people, one that was getting ready to retire, talking to a friend and thought that Medicare covered, didn't realize he would have to have a supplemental life health insurance plan. And so I want to kind of go through what the difference is between maybe assisted living and memory care and talk about how, you know, medical costs are skyrocketing and how people can, you know, focus on their financial planning for this aspect of retirement.
Well, when you think about the costs rising, again, I can't help but say it again. That's a great fear part of this. And there is reason to be fearful if you're not prepared. But the idea of just dealing with the unknown and just having this unknown target out there and there's nothing I can do about it, it just keeps going up, that's not right. And that's where I'm coming from through this of, you know what, those costs are rising, but more important is having a plan. Like you were talking about, Tyler, it's not about necessarily insurance all the time or having that bag of money, but having the discussions while everybody's healthy or they have their wits about them to say, if this, then what? And if in our family this never happens, fine. Mm-hmm. We didn't tie things up. We didn't make a big commitment that, you know, put the house in a trust we had to unwind or put these things away and pay a bunch of taxes. But those are the kinds of things that if you're having those discussions, then I think some of those healthcare costs and the inflation attributed, no, you can't really get around that. We're all going to be subject to that. But you could handle it a little better by, you know what, if this, then that. And having that discussion with a spouse, with a parent, with a child, you know, the idea of, you know what would I want? If I had a stroke or if something bad happened, what would I expect? You might hear your parents say, you know what, take me out back. And no, you don't want that.
Oh,
but
that, I know somebody who has told me that.
Yeah. And they want to protect their money. Sometimes they want to save the inheritance for you. And it's, you know, I see great people do the opposite where it's like, no, that's your money. We're going to use it for you. That's why it's there. But it's interesting when the family has that discussion, a lot of doors open.
Yeah. What kind of resources, as you're talking, my brain automatically goes to, where do I go to find all this out? Once I've had the conversation with my family, what's the next step? Do I research Medicare plans? Do I consider alternative income sources? I mean, to me, it's a spider web in my brain. Where to start?
Yeah, it's a multiple step analysis. The first question would be, do you have enough? Can you pay for these things on your own? That's the first question. And to Tony's point about the strategy, we ask clients questions along the lines of, well, would you make modifications to your home to stay there, to be able to live longer in the house? Do you want somebody coming to you?
Okay.
Or do you like the idea of, hey, when you're ready to go, you just go into a continuing care retirement community, which you see them everywhere now. Maybe that's the strategy because you don't want to be a burden to the family.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, comes with a huge price tag. You're talking, mm-hmm. in some cases, $500,000 to $1 million to get in the door,
right,
plus monthly rent payments, but all your care is covered. And you can kind of age in place. And as your needs go up, you just move to different parts of the campus and everything's there. And we've seen that play out great. But we actually have situations too where people will just come in and analyze the house and say, all right, maybe I need to change the bathtub to one of those walk-in type things or put a stair lift or, you know, chair to get up the stairs. And I can stay in my house and age in place until, you know, the end of my time. So what your goal is will drive the conversation on the strategy. And the Medicare part is, you know, you're kind of stuck with some of the options that are there. But the best thing on that front is every open enrollment, which is in the fall, make sure you're reevaluating your coverages. And a lot of the supplemental plans are contingent upon what type of prescription drugs you take or don't take. And so having an expert overlook your shoulder to guide you through that process is key. And there's advisors out there, that's all they do. They're Medicare experts. There's a lot of those here in town and across the country that we work with. And they're the ones that can guide the path on which strategy might be the best way to go. And then, of course, the cost comes with that.
Yeah, and that alone, as a consumer, and I like to call myself the every person at the firm, that's scary because when someone says, oh, it doesn't cost you anything for me to give you this advice about what insurance to use, my brain says, yeah, right.
Well, so they're getting paid, of course.
Explain real quickly how that works.
Yeah, in those situations, those advisors are paid by the insurance company. They're reimbursed by the insurance company.
Are they brokers?
Yeah.
Are they considered brokers?
So whatever plan they select, they're then have an agreement with that insurance company. That's what they get paid. But the client or that person going to see them would not be out of pocket any money.
So it's not a conflict of interest for them to have you in their best interest.
If anything, we think it may be a little better because there's other ways to do it where you might get online, do it yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have an expert to really talk to or guide you. And that website or the people behind it might still get that commission or that reimbursement Tyler's talking about. So I might say have someone earn it, mm-hmm. and someone really walk you through it. That's why I think that may be the better approach.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Thank God for the internet, right? Okay. Underprepared and overconfident. So for somebody who's saved a lot, do they really need a plan? You know, isn't that just for people who are kind of bad with money, that can't manage their money? So let's talk about that focus.
That may be the underprepared part. You think you've saved a lot. You know, $1 million isn't what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
We know that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's states now where that's a shack out back. So the idea of how long will that live? what are you spending? What are you living on? You know, what's going to be your expense in retirement? That's part of that. Be prepared and be able to say, this is what my expenses may look like. These are the big things like Tyler was talking about earlier. And then the other point of, when are you retiring? Do you know? And I think the whole theme of this show is don't pull the plug too early. Mm-hmm. Because if you go out too early and you're not able to come back and have that same earning power, maybe you didn't keep current with tech, or again, I hate to say it, but I think ageism is real in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So the idea of, can I come back in at 65 or 70 and pick up where I left off at a six-figure kind of job? Usually that's a lot harder to do. Mm-hmm. You might be doing some of those entry-level things to get health insurance or get by, but the idea of picking up where you left off is a lot harder.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to that. I think we saw during COVID, people retired sooner than they anticipated, tried to get back into the workforce, and that was an issue as far as where they could go to earn income. So the strategy is the key piece, just making sure you've got your timelines set up, but the costs are a little bit unknown. We have projections and we can do that, but you still don't know what's going to come next. So the best thing you can do, even if you have a bunch of money and can afford one of those continuing care retirement community entry fees, you still don't know how it plays out on the back end. So just making sure you're reviewing your cash flow, even as you transition into retirement, that's probably the most important scenario to look at that. And to make sure that what your new healthcare costs are, you think you're getting a break when you go on Medicare. It's like, oh, I don't have to pay $2,000 a month anymore. Well, maybe you do, mm-hmm. based upon supplemental needs and what you just talked about, Tracy.
I know we're not experts on that industry specifically, but I'm just curious, is there, because I know that there's certain adult communities, nursing facilities, I'm not sure what we call them, but there's a minimum of private pay before you can transition to the next phase.
I wouldn't really get into those details because what we're seeing more and more is, and this, again, if you hear me being a little dismissive now of it, there's a reason why, because again, it is such a big problem that's facing everyone right now. There's going to be modifications. Now, what they are, I can't really speak to, but the idea that so many of these facilities have found a way, right or wrong, or in between the gray lines, but basically, sign away everything, your Social Security, your assets, everything, and we'll give you the promise to take care of you. Mm-hmm. And that, for some families, is a big problem. Mm-hmm. They don't want to give away everything for the promise of care. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, well, if you don't want to do that, take care of mom or dad. Mm-hmm. And if you want someone to full-time take care of mom or dad indefinitely, and you don't know what that cost will be because we don't know longevity, that's part of that promise that, you know, giving what you're giving up. And sometimes what you're saying, Tyler, plan ahead, have that discussion. Maybe there is life insurance that comes back into play where, you know what, all these things are funded. Maybe there is another asset that comes into the plan. You know, there's different ways you could think about it. But again, it's a matter of having a plan, discussing.
Isn't it kind of hard to get life insurance, though, when you're a little bit older?
That's the point about proactive planning, mm-hmm. doing it while things are good.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Medical issues come up, you're older, insurability becomes an issue. So mm-hmm. you got to do it while things are good, which is often 10, 15 years before you think you might need care.
Wow. Okay. So from pensions to portfolios, income and uncertainty. For somebody will say, you know, dad's got a pension and a gold watch, somebody's got a 401k and YouTube tutorials on investing. You know, are they supposed to just guess what to do? Boomers kind of have to create their own paycheck, I guess, right? So navigating volatility, the required distributions, all of the things that go underneath retirement. What's the financial planning focus for those bucket strategies?
It starts with cash flow, just like anything in planning. So when you're looking at the portfolio and withdrawal needs and strategies and where the money comes from, it starts with what income streams do you have? People think of Social Security. You mentioned the pension. Those are going away. Those are not going to be there for most, certainly our generation and beyond. I don't think the pension's really going to be a thing from what we saw 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
But somebody who has a pension, then you take a look at, is that enough to cover their lifestyle? And if it is, great. You can be more aggressive perhaps in the portfolio and invest for the next generation. If it's not, if you need to withdraw money from that portfolio to supplement your living expenses, then you build the strategy and cash flow laddering and a lot of things we do on the technical side of the portfolio to make sure that you're not worried about taking money out when markets are volatile or a major life thing happens and you're very emotional. We've got the strategy laid out in advance And so it all comes into together with based upon living expenses and what's coming in the door as far as your income.
Because this is your language and not mine, can we explain what cash flow laddering looks like and what that means?
Sure.
Yeah, the different sources of your income. You might have money in your savings account, you're transferring $5,000 a month over, you know, you got your severance from work or you got your last payout or something, you've been planning for retirement. So there's money in my savings account, I'm just going to transfer every month. That might be part of your cash flow ladder. And then 6 months after that, if you had a pension, maybe you were an employee of the government or something like that, you turn that on. That may be another layer of your cash flow. Maybe there's Social Security if you're 67 or depending upon your age that you turn on. And then you might also have a business, a rental, other income. And again, there's almost an unlimited source after that. But those are the big ones you might think of to say, okay, when I'm thinking my cash flow and where am I going to get my money, I need to structure it out of all those different things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The big elephant in the room is the tax trap, which can really, you know, fracture your success. So if somebody does everything right and now they owe more in retirement taxes than they did while working, what are they doing wrong? How can they get, you know, we're not CPAs.
Yeah.
But well, what kind of
maybe planning? I'll take the positive side of that first. If you owe more tax in retirement than when you're working, then you did a hell of a job saving.
So that's a good problem.
I think so. And there's other tools you can use to offset the tax bills when you're in retirement. And you mentioned RMDs. You can gift to charity out of those requirements. There's a lot of things you can do on that side. But certainly when you're planning on taxes, you got to look at not only federal tax, but state tax. Mm-hmm. And you've seen a lot of people leave states like California, New York, and head south or to Texas to just save money on that tax side too for retirement purposes. You know, it's eating into their cash flow. So mm-hmm. it depends on the scenario. But I think if you're paying more in tax retired than working, you won.
Hmm. Glass half full. Some people don't realize you pay taxes on Social Security.
And it depends, though. Right? I mean, it depends on how much. But yeah, exactly. And sometimes if you're still working and you claim Social Security early, you might even lose some of your benefit. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to understand before you do something like start Social Security, leave your job. You know, these are where talking to an expert, you know, I've been able to say it. I've retired over 100 times now. But you get to retire once. Mm-hmm. And the expertise that comes along with that. And you know what? What happens next when I'm 6 months out from retirement? What am I to expect? What am I to do? 6 months after retirement, what am I to do? Those points of time are crucial.
Is that the benchmark? We'll take Medicare first. When does somebody, I mean, I should have asked that question before, but when does somebody start thinking about Medicare?
Yeah, 6 months to turning age 65. So 64 and a half.
Okay. Yeah. And then what about Social Security?
That depends. It could be early as 62 or as late as 70. And that depends on the planning needs.
Okay.
So you could start collecting it at 62 or you could wait all the way until 70.
That's when the chess game comes in.
Yeah.
You know, how much more do you want to, you know, it's a risk in and of itself, right? It's like playing the stock market. Okay. Finally, preserving wealth, privacy, and dignity. So, you know, you want to help your family, not confuse them, stress them out. You know, I think about my sons. I don't want them to go through what I went through with my parents. Have them sort through all the shoeboxes full of old passwords, which, by the way, I do not have before the peanut gallery starts weighing in on that one. I do have a spreadsheet. I know you're so shocked by that.
This is a good closing topic.
But how do you protect your kids beyond just sort of basic organization from having to go through absolute hell, you know, at the final day?
Part of our process, which we've seen play out very well, going back to how we started the conversation with dependent planning, is we'll encourage people to bring their kids into meetings early and often. You don't have to show numbers. You can just talk concepts. That's totally fine. Some people don't want to show the values and whatnot, but just to brain train the philosophies and the strategies that worked well for them, passing that on to the next generation is key. But also in that conversation, it's expectations. Mm-hmm. So you lay out what's going on, what you don't want to have happen. And with, like, for example, with your sons, you could walk them through the scenarios and what your experiences were and what your goal is to prevent that from happening to them. And so an open book is key, but you got to be willing to do that. And that's the only way it'll work is if both parties are engaged.
I've expended about 7 of my 9 lives, so I think we've had a lot of those conversations in my house. But I grew up in a situation where that was taboo to talk about those things. So I've kind of taken the polar opposite approach with the boys and probably ad nauseum, you know, to the eye roll point. But I definitely believe it's beneficial to fully expose your underbelly so that everybody understands the expectation and the hope and no parent wants to be a burden or an imposition to their children, you know, so being prepared and organized is super important from my perspective. So anything else that we've left, any stone that we've left unturned in this conversation?
I'm sure plenty, but as we're trying to cover it and be expeditious here, I think we did enough for today.
Awesome. Well, whether you're looking to simplify, spend, or build a legacy, the first step is to organize your team of experts, your CPA, your attorney, and of course, your certified financial planner to help you navigate through the waters. We're here for you if you want to give us a call. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again.
Media. Think big.